Hey friend, welcome to Houston Made, a show where I, Rusty Gates, get to talk with local Houston-based entrepreneurs and business owners about what it's like to be in the middle of that journey and selfishly gain insights as I build my own businesses. Last week, I talked about how I had scheduled no appointments. I'd blocked out my calendar so that I could have a week kind of away from doing business to work on my business. And I think pretty much as soon as I finished recording the intro and outro for last week's episode, I just got hit with the gnarliest of sinus infections that has just hung around forever. I'm finally, I think, on the mend. And it was really, I don't know how to feel about it. On one hand, I'm super grateful that I had already blocked off my calendar so that I wasn't out like having to try to either reschedule things or like debate going out to shoots not feeling 100. So that's a good thing. But on the other side, like, I just wish it didn't happen at all. But I feel like anytime the weather drops in 5 degrees, it's going to be an issue. Because I feel like I was taking care of myself, but you know, still got sick. So that's all, friends. Just take care of yourselves. And you know, take your vitamin C and all of those things. I'm super excited to jump into this episode and this interview. It is a very special one for me, and I'll get to that in just a second. Beforehand, I just want to say, if you are a fan of this show, if you like listening, if you want to engage more with the guests that we have on the show, I am now scheduling and hosting Instagram Lives with the guests after the episode. So we did one with Beckett from Seasons Harvest. By the time this episode releases in the morning, we will be doing one with Kale Duvall from Pumpkin Crunch. And then in about a week from now, we'll do one with Andy and Morgan from Fourth and Nomad. So after you hear this, if there are questions that you feel like you wish I'd asked, or we didn't have time to get to, or there was something confusing, I want that to be a space for you to be able to interact with the guests on this show directly. So if you haven't already, find us on Instagram, find the show at Houston Made Podcast, subscribe, turn on notifications, hit that little bell for the lives. And that way you won't miss them, because I would love, we obviously put a lot of time into the show and take time out of our schedule to do those live. So it'd be nice if y'all showed up. So thanks. But also, like, I really would love to connect you, right? I want this show to be about building community. So if that's something you're interested, Houston Made Podcast on Instagram. Now, this episode is super special because, one, it is the first duo of guests that we've had on at one time. And they are Andy and Morgan, Summer of Fourth and Nomad. The other reason why it's super special is because when I thought of this show, the first inklings of Houston Made were in my brain. Fourth and Nomad, Andy and Morgan, their names were at the top of the list of potential guests of people that I wanted to sit down and talk with. And that is because for far longer than I've been doing it, they have supported, encouraged, promoted, and sold other businesses from here in Houston, from Texas, and all around. And they've just been huge champions of others. And I think I love that. It was a real testament to the vibe of Houston being a supportive entrepreneurial community. And when I was starting out in real estate, just this lowly embarrassed realtor, they were super kind to me, let me hang out at the shop, let me ask questions about their business. And man, that kind of kindness just goes a really long way in my book. So just thrilled to have them on as guests. So without further rambling from me, listen in as Andy, Morgan, and I discuss how they use travel as inspiration, visiting cities like Japan and Mexico City to shape what Fourth and Nomad would become. We discuss some of the missteps they've made along the way in building their businesses, and we discuss how COVID was a crash course in communication, both for their marriage and for their business. Andy and Morgan Summer of Fourth and Nomad, thank you guys so much for joining me on Houston Made and for being the first duo to sit down.
Excited.
As a part of this show. I'm going to let y'all talk in a second, but let me do my rambling. I was telling Andy before we started recording that at the inception of this show, I think this is late 2018, I had like a notebook and I started writing the ideas down for Houston Made and what I wanted it to be, and had a list of possible guests, and your name was at the very top of that. And there's a great deal of shame that I carry for being now we're on season three and all these years later for just to now be sitting down with y'all. But it's a testament to the fact that you guys are such a staple in this Houston entrepreneurial world. And I'm genuinely so grateful to have y'all sit down with me. So for people who don't know, tell us a little bit about Fourth and Nomad, what all of this is, what you do here.
Yeah. You want to take this, Morgan?
You got this.
Okay. Yeah. So Fourth and Nomad has changed a lot over the years, but you know what it is now is basically it's a brand that believes you should feel good about the purchases that you make. And so Morgan sources and finds clothing, accessories, jewelry to inspire like socially conscious and like thoughtful living, intentional living. So we partner with small brands that kind of match our ethos to just provide just a really like thoughtful and conscious buying kind of experience. You know, we believe that, I don't know, the buying process is a little tired these days, and you have so many options to choose from. And so, you know, kind of focus on the aspect of a curation around this playful minimalist style, and everything kind of fits into that. Yeah. And so by partnering with like emerging brands and smaller brands, that's kind of how we kind of source all this and find it.
Yeah. So with that, it's clothing, accessories, jewelry, home goods, baby, a little bit of everything. But yeah, clothing and accessories mainly.
Yeah. Home goods. I mean, even you got some toys. I see we've got a checker, like a table tennis right behind you.
Oh yeah, that thing's awesome.
Some other kind of toys. Yeah, playful minimalist is really, I like the way you describe that, because I think that is obviously on brand. Intentionally so, likely.
Yeah.
But I think that that's what makes this space so cool is there are certainly cool places, and I don't even, not like, want to put air quotes around cool. I want to be like underlined bold, like cool places that I often don't feel welcome, where I go like, oh, I'm not this cool.
Oh,
like this
yes.
is not for me.
That's a real thing.
But I think that the playful side of all what y'all do here has always made me be like, oh no, this is cool though. Like I feel welcome here, even though I'm not maybe as socially conscious in my purchases and all of that. Right. But like, I can be here and be like, oh no, this is still approachable.
Approachable. Like, and that's a big word that like we focus on. And I think, I can't remember, but one, I think like online publication, they said it was like their kind of like polished high end vibe belies its come as you are vibe kind of thing, you know? And I was like, we were like, that was like the best compliment, because we want to present something that is kind of newer to Houston and a little bit different that you don't normally find, kind of taking some like West Coast and some East Coast kind of styles and bringing it to Houston. But we're not trying to be stuffy and exclusive in any way. So that's exactly it. Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't feel like posh.
That's a good word.
That you have to be of a certain threshold to come in here. And y'all do have stuff of kind of all different price points, and so you can certainly come in here and spend some money, but I think I've come in here and gotten a couple of things. I will say, I don't know that you carry them anymore, but I think y'all had giving keys at some point.
Those were the original.
I've got a giving key hanging in my car that I bought from you across
amazing.
The street in the other location.
Oh yeah.
And
it's
just always been there, and it was stamped with HTX, and I was like,
yes.
Yeah, this is a totem for me. as I was breaking into real estate and being like, I'm going to be a part of this.
Oh yeah, you're like the key.
Part
this
of this
is
world. Yeah, we got to do it.
Oh my gosh.
So yeah, that's in my car hanging right now. Okay, so tell me a little bit about the journey into this. I feel like I've talked to you a little bit about it way back in the day of how the very beginning of how this started. So what did that look like? Because my understanding, so this is, now we're going to fact check me.
I'm excited to hear this.
Okay.
Yeah.
My understanding is that y'all had obviously different jobs working in different industries. You were in, Andy, computer science, engineering, oil and gas, somewhere in that.
Oil and gas, mechanical engineering.
Third try. I knew it was.
It was right. I was
working my way there. And that you'd found some success in that and were doing pretty well, but maybe didn't love it as much as you thought you would have.
Yeah.
And then took some of the nest egg maybe he'd saved up there to start this. That's how like I have it framed in my mind. I don't know how true that is.
I mean, that's very true. I mean, that's yeah. So my degree is in mechanical engineering. It was just kind of something I always thought I was going to do. And kind of had some clues midway through college, like after the classes, my classmates would talk about the coursework outside of class. And I was like, what? Like, I could literally care less about this stuff, you know? So that was kind of like my first like, I might not actually enjoy this. And sure enough, I gave it like 2-3 years.
Yeah.
But yeah. That is exactly how it started.
And then I was in the supply chain management world.
Oh, cool. Yeah, that's...
Yeah. Ooh. Well, so, I mean, I love that world, but I was doing supply chain management for like IT equipment and like data centers. And so I thought like, oh, it'd be so much cooler if I could purchase things that are actually interesting to me, like, you know, everything we have here. So, but whenever we got married, we always knew we wanted to open up something. Like, I guess we both just have very entrepreneurial spirits. Mm-hmm. And so we just, in our corporate lives, we're just kind of bored and not super tired. Content. So we would travel a lot during that time period and kind of drew inspiration from a lot of different cities that had really cool concepts like this. And it just didn't exist in Houston. So that was kind of whenever it was one trip. We came back home. We're like, let's do this thing. And then it kind of really went going from there super fast. And here we are.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, y'all did an interview before that after traveling, y'all had discovered that you wanted to create a space to celebrate artists. Do you remember what it was? Like what that trip was? Or
yeah, it was Atlanta.
Atlanta. Cool store called Citizen Supply that I think was like one of the coolest concepts. It's not really around in its original form anymore, which is so sad because it was done by also just a guy with a really great vision. But yeah, he just had a lot of spaces that were for people doing really cool things. So people would come and like make things out of that space and sell them out of that space. And he also curated just like small emerging brands as well. And it was cool.
Yeah. And I guess just on that note of like why we essentially were trying to do our version of that here.
Yeah.
And, you know, as she said, that's not around anymore. And the reason we are so different from that is because it just didn't work. You know, that model just didn't work. We tried every which way, and he had 12,000 square feet. We have a little over four. Oof. And it worked across the street when it was 500 square feet. And we ran into these supply chain issues, all sorts of logistical issues. And so
Let's go into that a little more. Okay, great. So the first iteration, you had a storefront, which is across the street from where you were now.
Yeah.
We're on Yale and what's the cross street?
Seven.
Okay.
Yeah.
So... there's the Lululemon and all that. So people, this is like the heart of the Heights. Also, what a crazy space to be in. I think when we were like, want to like go into town and we're like, just right here. We're like, this is it. This is Houston. Like that's in my mind. But so you're in this smaller space, 500 square feet. In that first iteration, how are you sourcing products? Where are you finding products? Cause you're trying to curate this Houston focused, Texas focused creator market.
Yeah.
But in a store front, like brick and mortar. So yeah, what did that look like? How many people were you working with? How many products were you carrying? I'm just fascinated in the evolution.
Yeah, I think it's a really great question. I mean, whenever we were in that 500 square foot place, we were hyper focused into like the local. Houston has such amazing artists, such amazing makers, and we really wanted to highlight that. You know, people like Pretty Cool or like Sir Winston's, like just really cool Houston brands that are doing some fun stuff. But had the opportunity to really highlight it in that space. But as we moved over here, you know, realized it's not super sustainable model for 4,000 square feet. But we still had a very strong ethos.
Why not? What was the disconnect when you have a bigger space from like super hype, like hyper locally focused? Yeah. What was the disconnect?
Really just lack of brands, lack of product.
Yeah.
Essentially.
Lack of inventory.
There's only so many people that you could source from.
100%. As fast.
Yeah. And when you're working with hyper local, artisans, obviously they cannot necessarily knock out the amount of inventory and quantity you need then you're selling through quickly. But you really still want those people involved. And so how you can get them involved is just following the same ethos, but really expanding your net, essentially.
Yeah.
Yeah, to be a little bit broader. Yeah. Well, and that makes sense. I think, you know, especially on the front end, and Pretty Cool does feel like an anomaly. And Jeff's been on the show to talk about their thing because they've got five makers, or I think six at the time back then, that were making and investing. And they had many hands to work on their products. But as you said, a lot of these people, it's just one person. I mean, even Bob and Holly doing Statesman and Sir Winston Syrup, all of that. It was for a long time just him cooking, like in the Ecclesia kitchen, just making that. And I think it's interesting is because at the beginning, when you have a lot of those smaller makers, you're probably, it's people who are making enough product for the next market. So it's on their schedule. They probably have another job.
They have another job.
Or a family or other responsibilities. So they kind of make at their demand. And all of a sudden you're there being like, whoa, whoa, we sold everything.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Yeah.
But they're now like being held to this, hey, but we would love to keep it always on our shelf, not a sometimes on our shelf, because people are coming in here with an expectation of you carry this stuff. So where is it?
Yeah.
So that's fascinating as you grow and you're able to find more of that, but still supporting a lot of local folks.
Yeah.
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just think like, you know, we were 26 when we started this and neither of us had back-end retail experience, if that makes sense. So, you know, didn't fully understand the concept of, like, inventory needing, like, to hit a certain amount of sales, you know, and just there's all these ratios, turnover. And so, ideally, we would have caught that a little bit sooner before we opened up across the street, because it was like, we launched great, and then it just was like a very empty store, and it was like, oh no, like
you have to keep buying the inventory.
They are trying to make it as fast as possible, but it's just you know. So it was a hard lesson learned in 2019 whenever we opened, but I think we figured it out now, which feels good.
And you can always say as much or as little about this as you want, but I'm fascinated of like how much runway did you have going into it, being like, okay, well, if we don't sell anything, we can do this for 3 months before we're
not
screwed.
Enough.
Not enough. And that was
painfully
our,
not enough.
Painfully not enough. I mean, the build out went a little bit over, but honestly, a little bit was us kind of, you know, shooting ourselves in the foot. So basically, we opened across the street, and in 6 months, we got this opportunity to open up in the airport, kind of like partnering with like United Airlines. They were running this like local kind of initiative.
Yeah.
And so we went and did that. So that was a little bit of
like a Fourth and Nomad kiosk. Or is it like a...
It was in the center of all these
bigger
gates.
Than a kiosk, but...
It's bigger than a kiosk, but like...
It's still an open field.
Yeah.
It was interesting. Okay.
It was interesting. I will say that. Which that's a whole other thing. Working in the airport, I... don't know. I mean, it was worth it, but it was a ton of work.
Okay, so y'all get this opportunity.
Yeah, so we get that. And so again, that's more money. You know, you have to just create out of nowhere. And so we did that and then pretty much immediately signed on to start building out this space, which that took about a year and 2 months, I think. So you raise money. We raised it privately and then kind of had enough for that. Well, then... comes along through the airport store. This person says, I have a spot in River Oaks district that I would love for you guys to do. And we kind of heard them out. And they basically offered it very low rent, like virtually nothing.
Yeah.
But again, still, you had to buy inventory for it.
Yeah.
So instead of raising more, we thought, let's use the money we'd raised for that one space. And let's make it work for both. And what it did was hurt this space, and then that other space was the most absolute...
It was a disaster.
Disaster. I mean...
It turns out people don't actually shop at River Oaks District, so...
Really? Okay, tell me more. So tell me about the River Oaks experience, because I was aware that y'all had done a couple things. It seemed to me that maybe y'all had backed off, but...
Yes.
River Oaks, what happened there?
Yeah. So basically, like Andy was saying, we had a woman come to us like, I love the concept. I want y'all in so bad that I will give you virtually no rent. Just come do it, which we figured out why later. But
for anybody who's like going into like leasing, if somebody's offering it for you for free or offering it to you for free.
It's because no one else wants to be there.
There's a reason. Nobody wants to pay for it.
Yes. And so we just had such great plans for that place. But we probably, each store probably saw one customer a day. And that is not an exaggeration. Wow. Like, we talked to every store owner over there. Maybe two people a day. That's like, if it gets crazy. So these people are counting on that one person coming in and spending $10,000 with products like ours. There's not a transaction that would exist that would be that much money unless they just buy our entire clothing inventory. So, yeah, it just was a massive fail. And so we started seeing all the brands around us start pulling out and leaving. And so we had to find our way to pull out and leave. But yeah, so now it's kind of a ghost town over there. Great restaurants.
Yeah. Yeah, great restaurants. That's it.
Well, and I mean, to some degree, that makes sense of it. That is one of the obviously higher end parts of town, and it's well known for that. And it's got this reputation. Yeah. And people are going in there and it's like, oh, I'll buy this one bag for $10,000. And for that shop, they go, cool, thanks.
Yeah.
Like, that works for us.
Exactly.
But your average purchase point on y'all's, even if it is, they're buying a lot of stuff, like $10,000 would be such a stretch.
Dude, I know.
Which would be, okay. So, you went from there. And then what happened with the airport? How did that play out?
Well, that was always just going to be a one-year thing.
Okay. We were actually looking for a permanent location until COVID happened.
Yeah, because United's, like, their design was, okay, this is going to rotate every year. But then after, like, we had a good relationship with them, and we were trying to kind of find a spot. But then COVID hit, and it's funny, they emailed us after, and they were like, you guys left at the absolute perfect time. Like, you do not want to be here. I mean,
out thankful. Of all the places to be in COVID.
Imagine being
we are so thankful.
Okay, that was a 1 year thing. And so what does it look like now? So you've got this space. Are there others, or where does Fourth and Nomad live?
So Fourth and Nomad, we actually, beginning July 1st, split it out into four different entities. And
like corporate, like business-wise.
Because
I'm so fascinated by this.
So we have what's called Off Chance, and that is like our parent company. That is, it's like our back office that runs all of these brands that we manage. These brands are Fourth and Nomad, St. Morgan, which is our kind of like home and personal care fragrance line. So it's like a fragrance company.
I did not name this. I do feel like I need it.
Yeah. She didn't name this. This was mine.
But it's named after you. Inspired by you. Muse. Yes. Okay.
Oh, man.
Inspired by Morgan.
I hate that so much.
I know. She doesn't like it, but.
Josh Hafty's Muse on Uncut Gems.
But yeah, so, because I don't know, like, we make kind of like some of our own, like, candles, hand wash, you know, things, and realized that there was some friction kind of like in the messaging process of like, we are a clothing and accessories lifestyle brand.
That also makes our own
that
stuff.
That also makes that like also has fragrance a products. Shop. It just was a little confusing depending on. So we were like, we need to split this out. And so sister companies.
Got it. What were the others? So we got.
So we have Fourth. So Off Chance is like Off-chance the head the big, and three branches of Fourth and Nomad, St. Morgan, and then the coffee bar.
And then the coffee bar.
Yeah.
Which y'all are able to get away with in here because it's less than 10%.
Less than 10% of the overall of the space.
And it's all to-go coffee?
Well, maybe I permitted it like that. But yeah.
I mean, it's in a to-go cup.
It is in a to-go cup.
Like,
yeah.
I could take this with me. It's not a mug. There's no dishes being.
We added the chairs and stuff after. I don't know if I need to cut that out. We'll see. But yeah, it's for anyone who's doing something. Sure. The term is accessory use. If you go in there saying it's an accessory use, that was a big, I had to like consult with a lot of people to figure out exactly how to do that because you trigger parking permits and yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, parking permits.
That's the biggest one.
But it is great. This would not be the same without the coffee bar.
No, it's been so cool to see how that has enhanced the space and now you've got more things that you can offer.
Yeah.
And I think the structuring of the business like that, that seems super logical because there are so like the finances of each one. I assume now those can be semi-separate and you have like the right paper trail of, wait, what was this? This is, that's coffee bar
stuff. Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah.
So one of the things I was going to say, I wanted to ask about is because y'all do carry a lot of different things. So we do have home goods when it comes from ceramics, handmade ceramics, you have leather goods, you have clothing, apothecary type things with the candles and whatnot. Is there a natural fluctuation in the seasons of like certain things being more popular or in higher demand and then that like an ebb and flow of that? And then as a follow-up to that question, has the diversity of your shop, does that then like protect you a little bit or insulate you from some of those tides?
You know, absolutely. Coming into the holiday season, like, so we've really leaned pretty heavily into clothing this last year. And so clothing tends to be pretty seasonless. People always need clothing. But one thing that's really nice going into the holidays is clothing people still want for their events, like their whatever they're going to, but people still really need gifts and gift items. So what's kind of nice is having the diversity of product. We are still offering a ton for gifts, like a ton of things that people genuinely want to be gifted, but also what people want for ourselves. So I do think that protects us a lot. Like throughout the different seasons. So now we are a need-based business and a want-based business, which is kind of kind of nice.
Yeah, that's really cool. Let's talk about, again, this is kind of a person-focused podcast. Let's talk about marriage.
Like,
let's do it. Duo here. when we talk about, working together, this is the first one. I think trying to get more specific with these questions, but in my experience of marriage, Jess, my wife, and I think y'all met her at the grand opening.
Yeah.
I don't think we were here. We met when we were 18 years old, dated for a little bit, broke up, and then got back together, and then got married when we were 25. I'm now going to be 35 this year. So we've been almost married for a decade.
Awesome.
And we have each been dramatically different people in that season, right? Again, imagine when we were 18 to, Rusty the pastor, Rusty, working at corporate search, Rusty the realtor, now Rusty the entrepreneur media guy, all of that. And Jess has certainly changed, and we've gone through roles of parenthood, and y'all have gone into all of that. So we've changed a lot. So with that, you've been doing this together for a long time. As you both have changed, has there ever been a desire for one of you to be like, I don't want to do this anymore, I want to go do something else? Or as y'all change, obviously you've built it up, so it's not just the two of you anymore, you've got a team here. But I'm fascinated as you change as individuals, what that's like.
Yeah, I mean, the change is the perfect word because, we talk about that all the time. We're different people now than when we first got married and 2 years ago, 3 years ago. I think the biggest change is in our communication. It's hard whenever you're business partners and spouses.
Yeah.
And it's kind of hard to draw that line because maybe in a fight that is personal, you bring in business stuff or maybe you bring in personal stuff into business stuff. It's very hard to kind of separate that.
Mm-hmm.
And this is me, she doesn't do this, but it's funny, I'll see something in our personal lives and I'll be like, ooh, I need to say something because that could affect the business.
Oh my gosh, I do not think that.
Yeah, I know
way.
You don't, that's but hilarious. I will. I'm like, oh, I better, that's a correlation.
That's so funny.
That's not good.
Good to know.
Sure, but I do that. But I will say our communication has gotten, amazingly better.
Yeah, I will say going through the COVID situation, and not knowing whether you're going to survive, what the future looks like, kind of planning for the end, because I feel like that's what most small business owners did during that time, was a crash course in communication for us. One of the hardest years of communication, but learned so much. Now we're leaps and bounds in a different place and we communicate really well now.
Yeah.
It feels like we have a system down.
We're gonna write a book. No, just kidding.
Heard it here first. Let's go.
Yeah.
but no, I will say one of us wanting to leave or wanting to do other things. Andy's definitely the ideas guy. I feel like he always has a million things running in his brain of what he wants to do and is always thinking bigger, bigger, bigger. And for me, I'm more of the content one. I'm like, oh, but look at this. This is so cool. Let's just do this.
Let's just chug along. Yeah.
Yeah, let's chug along. Exactly. And so he definitely pushes me to but look at the possibilities, look at the options. So in that way, he's always thinking of what's next? What more can we do? On the negative side, I do think, as times get hard, we both take turns wanting out, of course, during COVID and things like that. And I think that's where having a partnership that's a marriage is really amazing because you can really give each other strength when one person needs it more and things like that. So, yeah.
Yeah. I think we're different in good ways, because I think when one of us gets a little outside of the railing, we're able to bring each other back because I think we exist on opposite sides of the railing.
We do.
Yeah. And you kind of help each person not drift too far off.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think the biggest difference is I'm always thinking about what's next or new things. Mm-hmm. And Morgan's just like, I'm just going to make this the best thing that I can.
Yeah.
You know, so like me, I already have like the next four things in my mind I want to do. Yeah. And Morgan's like, hey, Fourth Nomad, that's my thing. Like, and that's the way we've structured it too.
Yeah.
You know, Morgan is very much like the head of Fourth Nomad. It's a women company. A team of women, and it's really great. And you kind of see that reflected in the store as well.
With some of those new ideas, is there, I mean, it seems like you all have a shared aesthetic to some degree. Like,
y'all
are
both
really comfortable in this space. And you go like, yeah, this makes sense. Like, I could put either one of you in this space and I go, yep, that fits. But is there ever a desire to kind of like go against the brand? Like, is there ever going to be like a grunge skateboard shop that I could, like, because I would like be on board with that and I'd be there?
That's hilarious.
I know what you mean.
I actually don't think so.
Probably not. Like, that is what we align in. We want our businesses to be a place that inspire people in their everyday living. Kind of a break from the norm by prioritizing like aesthetic and, for lack of a better word, like vibes. Like, we are all about like how a space makes you feel. And so I think that's kind of the thing with Off Chance is going to be kind of that company that launches these brands.
Yeah.
They will all kind of adhere to kind of a similar ethos.
Yeah.
Like, for instance, St. Morgan, their fragrance company, it's all about allowing people an avenue of exploration to find fragrance in an approachable manner.
Okay.
You know, and so you'll see a lot of similar messaging, I think, throughout everything.
Sure.
And then, and like you're saying, aesthetic. We do have such a similar aesthetic, so that makes it very easy. Neither of us are bringing something drastically different to the table. Like, ooh, that doesn't fit.
Was it innately in you that you're like, we know what it is already as far as that aesthetic and shared aesthetic? Or what was the process of discovering that? So I feel like in my businesses, I've been discovering that. In the real estate side, I don't think I ever figured it out. I think that when I started, I was putting up these collared button-up shirts, like checkers, and being like, I'm a realtor. And like, this is what I think I'm supposed to look like.
Yeah.
And then I got more and more, I think I found my vibe a little bit better, where it's like, okay, well, I'm going to wear an athletic shirt and a hat. And then that's evolved. And then the media company that feels more like this space where I can be like, oh, okay, like I can be me and like put my, so I think I'm figuring some of that out. It very much is me just trying to make the 16-year-old version of myself inside like very happy to be like, oh, you didn't skateboard then, we're gonna get a skateboard, we're gonna learn how to do that. So I'm like, I feel like at 35 I'm just now starting to figure out how do I like make this look, and how do I make the look reflect my personality, my identity. What was the journey of figuring that out? Because I know I think I heard at some point, I forget his name, the guy who's the 1924, he did some of this, right?
Christian Watson.
Christian did some of this space, right?
No, he's awesome, though.
No, he's great. I'm okay. A big
he's
fan
really
of
cool.
Him, yeah.
Shout out.
Yeah. That'd be awesome.
If he were back here, he'd be on the show. Sure.
But, I'd love to hear
okay,
but, that one.
Yeah, so to step back then, how did y'all find that?
So honestly, travel. And like, I think, you know, our first year of marriage, like I was saying, we were traveling a lot. And I think like, going to places like Japan or like Mexico City. We both have like family living in LA. And I think we both drew so much inspiration from these places and like realized like we liked the same things from all these places. And there's like a world where all of those designs and aesthetics like meet. And yeah, I feel like it's very organic. I know. So it's not like a set process really. But
yeah, I can't really like pinpoint. I mean, I think it's just happenstance that we both like the same stuff.
Yeah. It's very helpful.
But we discovered it kind of together and evolved together just by traveling together.
Yeah.
And so that, I mean, that's kind of like where the nomad part of the name comes from.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's get into the fourth and nomad, because first off, people are going to spell it wrong. So.
Oh, yep. I know.
It is not the number four.
It's not the number four.
F-O-R-T-H. Yeah. Fourth and nomad. Okay, so talk to me about the name and nomad, all that.
Okay, yeah. So, the nomad part is my part of the name, in a sense that this was a conversation of us trying to name this thing. Mm-hmm. And I like the idea of the name kind of centering around something nomadic, nomad, drawing inspiration from different places, mm-hmm. like, because that is what this place is to us.
Yeah.
And so the fourth is Morgan's, because she is very much focused on, like, moving forward, like, improving yourself, self-exploration, personal care, kind of that. And that it's kind of, you know, in a... It was kind of like a tongue-in-cheek comment. I was like, well, then let's just call it Fourth the Nomad, because we were kind of like getting frustrated because none of us could decide on a name. And then it was just like the more we thought about it, we're like, that's exactly what this is. And so it's kind of, it's cool. It's like a representation of both of us, but very true to how we operate this business and draw the inspiration for it.
But I like that so much of that came from just exploration.
Yeah.
Right? Is saying to figure out your aesthetic, like finding out there, getting out there and say, what's in the world and how can we... like honor these different cultures, and how do we, if we really like this, how do we showcase some of that and make it our own? Because by no means, like, it absolutely does not feel like cultural appropriation by any means.
Oh my
gosh. It feels like it feels like you've taken these things and built it and made something completely new. Right.
That's awesome.
It does have this when you talk about, like, and like going to Mexico and some of these places, I go like, oh, I see it. Like, I mm-hmm. see the influence here. But you didn't clearly just be like, oh, we're just going to like do all Aztec. Right? It's not, you're not just like painting with those colors. You've just taken some of those elements and been like, oh, we really like that. We want to do that. So I think that that's really cool. And I think probably some of the reason why I found a better way of communicating my own, I guess, aesthetic has been through that, of just being, oh, well, I've started. When I started making things and getting into more of the creative space, I just started consuming more of that kind of stuff and finding artists that I loved. I'm going to have a Zoom call this, maybe this weekend or in the next week or so, with this guy that I found on Instagram Reels, and he makes art, like design. It's like, he's like a designer, but he does a lot of tangible work that he blends with a old school scanner, like just like old school, like printer scanner.
Yeah.
And he'll take food and like throw it on the scanner, but then like distort those images, and it's just the coolest stuff
that's
in the
really
world.
Cool.
And
he's
very well read and can talk you and then he has a newsletter where he breaks down why he did what he did, and he's like, oh, and then I took these ice cubes and I froze this piece of art in this ice cube, and then I broke it up and I scanned that, and it just anyway.
That sounds awesome.
Joe Boyd.
Okay. I want to go see.
Yeah. Joe Boyd. I'm 98% sure that that's his name. It's so fascinating, but finding those things, being like, oh, that resonates with me on a like some weird deep level. And how do I then take that, let it ferment, and then create something new?
Yeah.
Well, and I think like a big part of it is, you know, buzzword that we use internally a lot is just like intentional, like just be intentional about everything, design, you know, just it consistency doesn't just happen. It has to be a very intentional like process, and it has to be in all of your decisions. And so, and I just think that's in designing and kind of in a lot of the things we do, we just make sure to take time to just do it intentionally and make sure that it's consistent with everything else. And I think that's another good reason to have a business partner, like for us to be doing this together. It's because, you know, there's been times like, oh, we should do this, and she'll be like, yeah, but does that really like make sense with everything else? Because you can kind of get tunnel vision on things. And so, you know, brand identity is just super important. And your customers aren't going to be like, wow, I really like the brand identity of this place. But subconsciously, they're going to connect with it a lot more if it's cohesive and it makes sense. And there's nothing that's subconsciously going to make them like stop and remove them from the brand, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
you're trying to immerse some. Yeah, it's like, oh, that doesn't make sense. And so, and you achieve that by just being like intentional. And so, you know, you kind of brought up, it's like, I think people say like, oh, like if in their mind, if they thought, oh, like Mexican design or Japanese design, mm-hmm. I think a lot of people's mind do go to this like cultural appropriation kind of style of that. But by going and experiencing it for yourself, like, it doesn't look the way I think people talk about it.
Yeah.
And so I think oftentimes, even here, when you look at things, you don't realize you're looking at a very Japanese influence architecture, but it is, you know, it's not what you always think. And so, like you said, the more you consume, the more you kind of open your eyes and see. To most people, it's just like, oh, that looks great. I love that.
Yeah.
But, you know, the more you experience yourself, it's like, oh, that's really cool. They drew some things from this area, from here. And so I just think that stuff's fun. I love architecture and interior design and things. So, so that part was super fun.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. I love it. And I had Ryan Levy on the show season 2, a winemaker at Nice Winery. They're the only wine producing vineyard in the Houston city limits, and such a cool space.
That's awesome. No,
it's great. We're members there, and I spend far too much money
writing all these people down.
Subscriptions through them. But he and I geeked out because I love the concept of wine. I love the idea of fermentation of it's just grapes. Like, they just took grapes, they put it in there, they mashed it up, and they let it sit and ferment, and then that process made it something entirely new. And I, even as you're talking through the Mexican, the Japanese influences, that's what y'all did. Like, y'all took those ideas, you kind of like mashed them up in your hearts and your minds, and you let them simmer, right? Yeah. It wasn't like, oh, okay, that's what we're doing, we're just going to do that.
Yeah.
Right? You're not just like grabbing it off the shelf and be like, now we're going to do it over here, which I think that's where probably some of the cultural appropriation comes from.
Oh, yeah.
Just like, oh, that thing, I just do that.
Yeah.
Where it's, you're not letting it sit and be shaped by who you are, mm-hmm. because as much as there is that influence, y'all's influence is all over this as well. And that's what I think makes it your own special.
Well, and I think kind of going back, you know, you saying like, hey, is everything going to kind of be mm-hmm. a similar aesthetic? And, mm-hmm. you know, and just on the example of like a grungy skate shop, like if we were to do that, that's not us.
Yeah.
But you know, I would love to see your take on it.
But you know what I mean? But it would probably feel stale because, you know, or maybe it just like fake. I don't know, because like it's not really who we are.
Yeah.
And so I do think even in business and all this stuff, like staying true to yourself and what you like it should just be an extension of yourself.
Yeah.
And so that's what we hope to do, because it also, it's easier that way.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and it goes back to, you know, back when this was just an idea for this show, when Houston Made was just scribbles in my notebook, y'all were talking about building a podcast studio here. I think y'all actually built it.
Oh, yeah, we did.
Yeah, we did.
It was very cool. Anymore. But, you know.
But I was like, yeah, maybe we could do this show there. And then as we were referencing that earlier, you were saying, yeah, it was just one of many things that we were trying to do, too many things at one time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But I think there's this element of you can't do everything. And you can't be everything, because you're not everything. You are who you are. And you could, in theory, do some of that stuff. But if you were going to, you'd be like, well, we have to hire someone else out to do that, where it's going to be some expression of them.
Yeah.
Right. I think that's, as y'all talk about building, y'all have built this team. Mm-hmm. I have multiple ideas. I'm like, okay, where are we going with this? I think we've already touched on it, of this idea of you can't do everything.
Yeah.
Yes.
You gotta stay true to who you are and the vision and all that. So good. Cool. We got that. Check.
Done.
Let's then talk about building and scaling, because you have, obviously, even in the other location, y'all had part-time help, mm-hmm. and now you've got like a team. So what does a team look like right now, and how have y'all kind of scaled that and built that up?
Yeah. Golly, it's really grown a lot. Like really in the last like year and a half, I feel like it's at least doubled. But,
I will just add, when COVID, we were down to 3.
Yeah.
That's 2 and you, or 3 plus y'all?
So we were down to us 2 and 2 more. So okay. I guess 4. Yeah, tech 4.
But running the 4 companies, essentially.
Yeah.
When they were 1.
And so
we
were down to 4.
Crazy. But yeah, so now we have about 20.
Yeah.
About 20 employees. Yeah, which is awesome. And they're all amazing. And they all like have really found their like niche in this whole thing. And we have, you know, two or three that work for Off Chance that are like, you know, run, do the buying.
There's 4 of us. It's me, mm-hmm. you, and then Meredith and Steph. That's Off Chance. It's like the back office, and it's very much hands in all of the 3 brands.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. And Stephanie, she's been a part of it for a long time.
She's an OG.
Right?
That's
like OG.
OG. Old location.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Shout out. Since day one. She's our day one.
She is our day one.
Yeah. And then we have our Fourth and Nomad brick and mortar Heightside, mm-hmm. and that has about 8 total. I'm counting myself in that, so I guess 7.
Yep.
And then we have
2 over at St. Morgan.
2 at St. Morgan, and then
at the just coffee bar.
Yeah.
More people. But yeah, and so, you know, just kind of like on that note of like just scaling and growth, I think it was kind of a scary thing to start doing after COVID because you kind of reach this point where like you don't know how quickly it's going to come back. You're worried about, is it going to regress, which it did, you know?
Yeah.
And, but you have people that are depending on you, you know? And, you know, so we, I mean, like, we didn't pay ourselves, you know, just like we didn't, we actually did not lay anyone off or anything during COVID, but you know, we stopped paying ourselves, just kind of went bare bones on everything. You know, the government helped.
Sure.
Didn't like solve all the problems, but it allowed you to keep the lights
catch
on.
Breath, yeah.
And just got creative. And I think like a lot of, I think St. Morgan was a little bit birthed out of that time. I was already in the middle of the build out of the coffee bar, so that was fun. I was just like, okay, still spending money.
Yeah, jackhammers in here, like churning up concrete.
Yeah, and so, you know, not to get too much in the weeds, but like your team just will naturally grow just because of a need. And so we hired to that, and it kind of is what it is today. And now it's like, all right, we're at a, you know, decent size from what we were. And now it's like, we need standard operating procedures. We need like all policies. And that's very much like what Morgan's focused on right now. So providing just some structure, HR stuff.
Look, my background for supply chain management, I did a whole lot of contracts and things like that. So it's funny because it was like always my least favorite part of my job. And now I'm here doing it all over again. So,
Andy, in one of the previous interviews you had done, you had mentioned one of the things you wish you had learned or started earlier on was more contracts with vendors and stuff on the front end.
Yes.
Let's talk about that.
What did you learn?
Sure.
I don't think so.
Just a little bit of tension, conflict, friction.
Well, I just think like there's a lot that like you just assume like, okay, we agreed upon this. Cool. In my memory forever. And then you like, you know, it's a year later. It's like, wait, what did we decide? We have nothing written down. Oh, like, no.
Yeah. It's like, I just think there's, now I'm remembering what this was about, but, basically it was like an agreement to basically like partner on something. And over time it like became, it was already like exercised. And then it was like time to get the money involved. And it was like, wait, no, what are you talking about? It was like, and I was like, that's the agreement. But like, we just didn't have it in writing.
We
wasn't this malicious thing. It was just like, there's no like Bible to reference. You know what I mean? Like there was no words, and it was just like, okay, it is very important to just set expectations, but write it down. Even if they're like great friends, even if they're, it's just cause over time you just distort it in your mind. And
if you work with friends, what keeps you friends is having a contract.
Well, and so I feel like I learned that through real estate, because obviously so much of what we do is through these you know, huge contracts that are transferring hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of property. But they are what they are. And then, so when I got into, started doing the media work, I was like, oh, we need to do this. And I really put off my very first big opportunity. I stalled out because I couldn't get the contract together. And what I realized was the reason I was struggling so much, spent weeks trying to make this Frankenstein's monster of a contract from all these, because there's like wedding videography contracts and then there's these event videography contracts and there's movie video. And I was like, but this is so niche. Like what we're doing is this weird social media type. So I was trying to put it together and stalled out for weeks. And eventually pushed, just like said no to the thing, which was, I think really was for the best. Not for the best reasons, but I think in the end it ended up working out. And what I discovered is the reason why I didn't like writing the contract and putting it together is because it is nothing but the worst case scenarios.
Yeah. Right?
That's just by definition.
Oh, 100%.
Saying like, hey, we don't think it's going to get here. It's probably not. It'll be fine. We're going to work it out. I'm a human being. You're a human being. But if all else fails and worst case scenario, this is the situation. Yes. This is the letter of law. This is how it will be addressed in those scenarios.
Yeah.
So by nature of it, and as a little Enneagram 7, my heart is like never wants to think about the worst case scenario. It's like, it'll be fine. We'll figure it out. I'll just give you your money.
What
do you need?
Believe the best in people.
Yeah. But now, like, again, as a grown up being like, oh no, like we have to have these things. This is very important.
Funny kind of on topic though, like, because Love the Enneagram. Such a silly niche thing. Think it's funny though, or fun. But Andy was a totally Enneagram 7 until going through the business and like just taking hits and the ups and downs of that. And now he's like, he's a 3. But just funny, yeah, that 7 personality where it's like, it'll be fine. Let's do this. It'll all be great. And then realizing like, oh, no. It isn't always fine. And like learning how to like.
Yeah. I was completely changing your optimist. Yeah. I still kind of am, but I just had to be.
It's different.
I guess, I don't know, change it a little bit.
Well, and I mean, you know, I think those core motivations tend to stay the same. The way they like manifest outwardly can certainly change. And I know that 7s and 3s tend to mistype as each other. I mistyped as a 3 for a long time.
Really?
Because I've constantly been this social climber. I think that entrepreneurial spirit has been in me.
Yes.
But for me, it's not so much. I need to prove it. I need to win. I need to succeed. I need to achieve. For me, I go, oh, this stuff's fun. Let's just do this. Like, oh, let's just go for it. And so it was a good friend of mine who called me out and being like, I don't think you're a 3. And I was like, why? And we worked together at the search firm. And he was like, because you take a lot of pride in being number one on the team, but doing so while only putting forth like 70% effort.
Yeah.
Like, he was like, a 3 could never only put 70% effort, but I'm like happy to mail it in. It's so like, oh, I'm still winning.
Yeah. Like, an A is an A.
Yeah. So like, I don't need to study. If I just show up and get a B, great.
It's totally how you use it.
I mean, we'll see. We'll see in 20 years. But I guess, but kind of just on that note of contracts and like, one thing we have learned is in kind of writing up these procedures and stuff, like psychologically, you know, if you have an interaction with a customer and say they're trying to return something outside the return policy, by simply reciting the policy back to them, I think it's like an 80% satisfaction rate. It's like you could just say like, hey, I'm sorry, we don't accept returns, or like you aren't able to return it.
Yeah.
But if you say, hey, our return policy is, it is received a lot better because they know, oh, this was thought beforehand.
Yeah.
This isn't personal.
Same things in like running a company by having, that's what like all these procedures, employee handbook, like you can point, it's like, look, this isn't about you. This is just how we do things. And it's just received a lot better, you know, because I think people in the moment, if they're told, hey, you did something wrong or you got to get written up or whatever, it feels personal.
Yeah.
And and so I think that's like the one of the biggest lessons just in growing, and you just got to provide that structure for people to operate in.
Yeah. Even as a solopreneur, I found that to be really helpful. You know, doing more of the media work and figuring out how does Rusty Gates Media handle revisions? How do we handle raw footage? And I've had clients be like, okay, well, could you just send it to us? And be like, well, it's technically our policy not to give you that. And then that's just like the end of the conversation. I go like, oh, right. Okay.
Yeah.
Because I go like, yeah, this is the rule that I've set for myself.
Yeah.
And as I scale this thing, that will continue to be our rule. But even as a solopreneur, I think you can just say stuff like that and be like, oh, this is the policy. This is that. But, you know, I'd be willing to give it to you at an additional fee if that's what you want to go. Let me know. So I think, the policy thing is real big. But yeah, you have to define what those boundaries are ahead of time. You can't do it in the moment.
Exactly. Exactly.
So you don't get into those spaces. Well, I think I could just sit here and talk to y'all for 6 more hours. But as y'all look back on just starting out, I mean, first off, I do want to applaud y'all because I think y'all had this idea as 2016. And then you like jumped into it 2017.
Yeah.
So that's not that long.
No.
Like 5.
It was less than a year.
Years. Yeah. You know, 6 coming up on, I guess, 6 years all in all. And that's crazy. So for this to be what it is, I think most people think about doing something in 6 years and they're like, that seems like so much time. But the reality is it's not that much time.
No.
Especially with all that you've done here. So kudos to y'all. This is amazing.
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah.
And then as you look back on, you know, those sweet, innocent babies who are just like, we're going to do it. And your parents are like, are you sure?
I know. Yes.
Yeah. What advice would y'all give your younger selves respectively back then? If you could talk to your younger self in 2016 and say, hey, before you get into this.
Oh, man. Talk to more people. And then like one of the most functional, raise more money.
Raise more money. Like, I mean, the bigger concept kind of stumbled a little bit out of the gates, like because of a lack of money. Like I said, like we kind of had enough, but then we spread it out to things that weren't allocated. That just hurt everything. And then COVID hit. That's a whole other thing. But there's a reason you raise more than you think, because you don't know what's going to happen.
Sure.
raise more money, like you said.
Yeah. Can we talk about that? I want to big yeah. break. This is I think one of those selfish moments that I'm like, well, I want to know. So, I mean, can you give me a brief overview of how do you raise money? How does that happen and how does it work?
Yeah.
It's all networking and connections. Yeah.
And having a really clear vision of mm-hmm. what you're trying to do, like
yes.
very clear vision that you can verbally say really well, but also have like visuals attached in some ways to give people like, cause you can't assume people see what's in your brain. Mm. You have to like give them something to like base it off of.
Yeah. And I think like the more experienced you get, like the more accurate your estimations become. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like you create like what's called like a pro forma and like, hey, this is kind of operates off of percentages of revenue. And it's like, you know, we'll spend 2% of overall revenue on marketing. And this is what we expect rent to be. You put as much fixed data in mm-hmm. there. And it just depends. Are you raising money to give away a percentage of equity that mm-hmm. you, so you don't have to pay back that money?
Sure.
That's not what we did. We are paying back the money yeah. still. And, is it just an interest-based loan, essentially? Mm-hmm. Kind of decide what's best for you.
Yeah.
I was a big, like, I'm not giving away any equity, but I've learned that's not always like the best.
No.
So you just have to evaluate what's best.
Sure.
I think you'll hear a lot, you got to keep 100% of it, but like, there's pros and cons.
Yeah.
Know? And, but yeah, so it's kind of getting your network of people who, you know, are looking to put their money in something. It's great if you can find an investor that has expertise in what you're doing. So
yes.
they can kind of provide
oh
some
goodness.
Value
yeah.
Into that. And then there's always, like I say, the first thing to always do is try to go through the SBA. Mm-hmm. They'll give you like a super great percentage, best percentage. Sometimes you can get it like 30 years, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
Because going through your bank, like, I mean, that's a way to do it, but those interest rates are
yeah
pretty high.
Yeah, in the same way I would tell people, like, don't use your big bank for your mortgage.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like, they don't care about you.
Yeah.
Yes.
Whereas maybe the SBA is a little bit more personable.
Well, it's like they're like the Small Business Administration.
Yeah. Like, you know,
this is what they do. This yeah. is what the money is allocated for. But again, you to get one from them, it has to be a really polished presentation with numbers, mm-hmm. data, a lot of stuff. And, but people should treat investors like that, even if they're family, even if they're
sure.
friends, because it's still going to be a professional relationship. And just, I don't know, be confident in who you're taking money from. If they're going to come
yeah.
knocking on your door in yeah. 2 years wondering what's up, you know.
Yeah.
Fortunately, all of ours were very understanding with the COVID stuff,
mm-hmm. yeah.
you know, but I know a lot of people that didn't. And
yeah.
It sucks.
It's really sad. Yeah.
But yeah, I guess just another thing is you kind of harp, or not harped.
I harp. I do harp on things.
No, you kind of brought it up earlier of like we had this podcast studio.
Mm-hmm.
We had an idea. It was like a life
subject.
But like the original idea was like this lifestyle marketplace kind
yeah.
of thing.
We had
and
a photo wall, a barber.
We had a rentable photo space, a barber,
yeah.
these brand spaces that would be rented out, art gallery. It was just too much, and that was just us in our just being young and
yeah.
inexperienced.
Yeah.
And I think I just heard a quote yesterday, and it's like my favorite thing ever, but it's don't play a game in which you don't have an advantage, you know? And what we have an advantage in is sourcing, aesthetic, and just like business operations
yeah.
and
yeah.
like finance. And so use that and like an understanding of brand.
Yeah.
Okay. And so we should only do things. I don't know how to run a podcast studio. I just thought it would be a nice thing to do
sure.
with this. I don't know. I don't do photography.
Yeah.
We don't do art. Like there's all these things like we tried to do that we really didn't know much about.
Yeah.
And so I think that's the biggest thing is just don't, we should have like harnessed our concept a little bit more.
Yeah.
We to be fair, we planned it out. It just didn't work. And
yeah.
it's because we had no advantage in that
yeah.
against anyone else.
But I do think one of our biggest advantages is like the ability to pivot. And I think that's why this has become what it has been and like actually been successful is just like recognizing when something isn't succeeding and being
yeah.
able to like quickly pivot, like not get emotionally attached.
Take out emotions. Yeah.
Yeah.
yeah there's some humility in that.
Yes.
Like put your ego aside to be like, oh, it didn't work.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
Like, as opposed to being, no, what was my idea?
Yeah.
Yes.
And I think there's a misconception of people who can easily remove emotion. That's like, oh, that's just how they are.
Mm-hmm.
I can just tell you for us, like we're very emotional people. You just have to learn. It's a skill.
Yeah.
You have to learn how to do it.
Yeah. Developing some thick skin a little bit.
That too. Yeah.
Well, and I'm sure, as with anything, I think one of the benefits of real estate, as much as I don't love the industry as a whole, and, you know, there were so many things about that world that I don't love, I think that it develops such thick skin so quickly, right? Because the stakes get so high, and when things go wrong, it's like, hey, this person's got $600,000 on the line, and it could like all fall apart if this thing doesn't go through, and like the stress of that. And I don't think prolonged stress is very good for you in any way, shape, or form. But I think acute stress, like working out, can be helpful to be like, oh, this sucks, and we push through it, and now we're stronger on the other side. So y'all have certainly gone through these moments, and obviously you've learned a lot of lessons, but also probably got a little tougher when you were like, oh, that didn't work and this sucks and moving on now. We got to just keep going.
Absolutely.
I was sensitive when we first opened.
Anything else you want to add? Anything?
No.
Great.
I think it's been a wild journey, but I'm like so thankful at where we're at now. And it's like, it was not always fun to walk through it. But like now being on this side of it, it's like, oh, I get it. Like we had so much to learn and we went through just a lot of learning experiences that I think were absolutely necessary. So it's exciting. It's exciting to be here now and just feel good about everything. And
yeah.
Well, y'all have done such an amazing job. Fourth and Nomad is a beautiful space. You carry phenomenal products. We will certainly push people your way, and everyone, you should come check this out. Andy Morgan, thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us. This was awesome. Yeah. This was super fun.
A huge thank you to Andy and Morgan and to you for listening to this episode of Houston Made. I'm still just delighted that we finally got to sit down and do this show after all these years. Just totally worth it. If you haven't done so already, go find Fourth and Nomad, Andy and Morgan, on Instagram at Fourth and Nomad. You can also follow them at drink.thecoffeebar. And finally, at St. Morgan Fragrances, Saint spelled out, where you can see all their businesses, or you can visit their website, fourthandnomad.com, where you can shop online, see all the cool things they've got going on, and even book a time to make your own candles in shop at the candle bar. If this is your first time tuning in, we have interviews available with entrepreneurs from all kinds of backgrounds, including chefs, marketing agencies, and ice sculptures. If you're interested in connecting further, you can find me on Instagram at Rusty J. Gates or the show at Houston Made Podcast, where we will be doing follow-up Instagram lives with the guests. Houston Made is hosted by me, Rusty Gates, scheduled, coordinated, and edited in collaboration with Megan Holstein. Special thanks goes out to Luke Bronner with Million Media for continued support of the show, and to Mac Ryan Creative for collaboration on our artwork. Credit for our theme music goes to Old Friends, New Friends. And Houston Made is glad to be a part of the Million Media neighborhood of podcasts and storytellers. We are people who care deeply about human connection. And in our neighborhood, we find that connection by sharing and appreciating one another's stories and by sharing our own. To find more shows made by amazing storytellers from all kinds of backgrounds, visit millionmedia.com.